The Positude Podcast, a one-hour show to bring joy, balance, and happiness to you and to negate the negativity in your life.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Positude Podcast. My name is Ira Robinson. As always, we're here with Maggie Hart. Hello, Maggie.
Hey, Ira. How you doing this week, buddy?
So far, so good. I can't complain because it doesn't do me any good anyway.
For real? Well, it's nice to be back here, and I'm really excited to do a new episode. I hope that everybody enjoys it this evening. We'll start right off with Sunny Stories. And this week's Sunny Stories is actually, it's kind of bittersweet. So it's not totally positive, but it has a positive ending. And I really liked it, so I chose it. Samantha and Don Sweeney were setting up some furniture for a yard sale. And they were outside getting things set up, and a police cruiser pulled up. And immediately, Samantha thought that she needed to get her permit out, because she needed to prove that she had a permit to have the yard sale. I guess that's the case in certain cities. It's not in mine, so I'm not very familiar with the process.
That would not go over well where I live.
Right? I guess some cities do that. It's called Conyers, the Conyers Police Department. It doesn't tell the state, but apparently if you live in Conyers, you have to have a permit to have a yard sale. So she went to get her paperwork, and the police, you know, put her mind to rest and said, no, we're not here to check your permit or anything. We were just wanting to stop and check out the furniture that you had for sale. And I guess the story behind it was earlier that morning, Officers Hutchinson and Searcy, again of the Conyers Police Department, had saved the life of a little baby who needed immediate first aid. And what happened was they had responded to a call. The child's life was at risk. They saved the child. The child had needed emergency support, and they realized that the family was in dire need and didn't have much, and that the baby did not have a crib. So they were actually on their way to Walmart to purchase a crib for this child out of their own money and bring it back to the family in need, which I just thought in itself was a very beautiful thing.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Isn't that great? And so they come up on this yard sale, and they're looking around, and they didn't see what they were looking for. And they told Samantha what they needed, and come to find out that a few years before, she had lost a baby early on, and she had a brand new baby crib upstairs in her attic that had never been used. So when she heard the story that the police officers told her about the little baby and how they had saved her and how the family was in need and didn't have a crib, she went right up in the attic and let them look at it and let them take it. And I just thought that was very beautiful. She said that she felt the Lord had guided her, or guided the police rather, to her yard sale, knowing that she had the crib in storage, you know, and that
I would say so.
Suffering the loss of a child, you know, and wanting to hold on to that in the hopes that possibly maybe I'd have another child, or just, you know, because of the sadness of the loss of the child, wanting to hold on to those things and not let them go. You know, I absolutely can see why she did what she did and why she kept it up there in the attic. And that's just, it's a very painful thing. But the fact that she, you know, the police officers were guided to her yard sale and happened to ask, you know, do you have any other furniture? We're looking for a baby crib. And the fact that she was able and ready to relinquish it for a needy child, and had the strength to do that, you know, that really touched me too, because I don't think that everybody would be able to do that, you know. And I know it sounds crazy, but I just don't think that everybody would have the strength to give something like that away had they lost a child.
It would at least give me pause for thought, that's for sure. And one of the things that comes to my mind with a story like this is, I wonder because we know that this kind of thing happens, you know, reincarnation and that kind of thing happens. And I wonder if the child that these police officers saved and helped and were looking for this crib for was actually her child originally, and that the crib that she was giving away was literally the same child's crib, just a different, you know, body, but the same soul.
It's very possible. I mean, that soul could have chosen to come down and, you know, had that predestined before, that I'm going to come into this family and I'm going to get something from my birth mom.
Exactly.
Or from my first birth mom.
Yeah, that crib belonged to that.
There too.
Exactly. Yeah. That crib belonged to that the whole time.
Yep. That's very, very good. Very, very good take on that too. And it's extremely possible when you hear of people who have had NDEs and, you know, especially babies, when they're coming in, when you hear the stories of children that remember and they choose which tunnel to go down and which family to meet and to be with. I had a child that I worked with that's extremely gifted, and she remembers in her entirety. She remembers being a teacher. She remembers coming down. She remembers why she chose the family that she did to go to. And so that's quite possible. It's very possible. And that makes it even more beautiful if that's the case.
Yeah, definitely. I love things like that. It's such a great thought project for me in the middle of the night to think, you know?
I can totally relate. And then we have the next story, which is Positive Phenomenon. Now, this one doesn't give a lot of names in it, but I thought it was really cool, especially with school just starting out here a few weeks ago. You know, you always hear of instances of children who get off the wrong bus stop or fall asleep on the bus, and then the driver gets back to the garage and sees a child in the back seat that's fast asleep, or, you know, instances of things like that where children get waylaid on their bus trip home. And it's a very, very stressful time for parents when, you know, your child doesn't get off at the designated time at the designated stop. It's a very scary thing. And this story tells about a child that was left off, actually. She got off at the wrong stop without her book bag, wasn't paying attention. She was a little thing. And she was 8 years old. And she got off the bus stop, wrong bus stop, no backpack. Her mom was waiting for her. Her mom's name they did give was Aliyah Donovan. And the little girl was wandering around a strange neighborhood, which to me is extremely frightening, especially in today's society.
Oh, yeah.
And here's this little 8-year-old girl walking around lost. And a stranger came, and actually, I don't know what guided the child to trust the stranger or the stranger to stop. She said she was just driven to stop and help the child, but she picked up the little girl and she took her to where she needed to go. And the woman, they didn't give her name, but she said that God guided her to see the little girl and get her safely home. And she said, luckily the little girl knew her mother's phone number by heart. And so that's how she was able to get in touch with the mom and let her mom know, you know,
that's,
I have your child. And
that's definitely something I've pressed into my kids from the very early age, is you remember your address, you remember your phone number, these are your mommy and daddy's names, you know, that kind of thing. They are very aware of that from a very young age. So just in case, because you never know, you never know.
Something else that I instituted is if someone came to pick up my child at the school that maybe my child recognized from the neighborhood or knew, we had a password. And that's something that I recommend to all parents too, is a secret code word between you
yes.
and your child or children that nobody else knows, and that you tell them explicitly, do not repeat this to anybody else except for mommy and daddy. And that way, if there's an instance of, let's say, a distant cousin or something coming to the school in the event of an accident or something terrible happened and someone abnormal comes to the school to pick up the child, having that password so that the child knows that it's okay to go with that child, because there are so many instances of child kidnapping and split marriages and split relationships where dads and moms are kidnapping their own children and taking them out of state.
Yeah.
That's kind of a way to abort that if the family is not together and the mom and dad are split up, and you make the child aware of that, look, if daddy comes to get you at school and he doesn't know the password, then that means mommy didn't tell him it's okay to come get you. Don't go with him, you know, or something like that.
Yep, absolutely. I know. I've done that kind of thing with my kids, and it gives me at least a little bit of peace of mind. You know, there was a story, not to go into negative, but just as an example, when my kids were younger, Crystal was outside playing and my mom was sitting outside with her, and she was like sitting on the other side of this big set of stairs that we've got. And so she wasn't being able to be seen from the road, but Crystal was out in the yard playing. And there was a van that came and stopped right in front of our house, and it was a pink painted van. And this van stopped, and Crystal said that this guy kind of waved her towards the van. Well, my mom kind of heard what was going on and saw Crystal looking at something, and so she stood up. And as soon as my mom stood up and this guy saw that my mom was there, boom, hit the gas and went down the road. So you know what that was all about, right? So that kind of thing occurs. So you want to make sure to do things like that to help protect your children. Even that little added aspect of the password that you give to your kids. I mean, we have a password for Wi-Fi. Why not have your password for your kids, right? So something like that can make all the difference, to say the least.
And I do realize that a lot of the elementary schools have initiated different policies and that they're much stricter now. I mean, ideally, they're much stricter now than they used to be when you and I were growing up. But I still have heard of many cases of, you know, there being loopholes where children have fallen through the cracks and people who shouldn't have picked up the child have picked up the child. So whether it be in that kind of setting or, you know, like in your setting or up here a couple of years ago, there was a white van that was cruising around trying to entice children at the local parks.
Right. Yep.
You know, and you see a lot of that, you know, it's a very scary thing. So protect your children. Now, the next one is furry heroes, but it's not about a furry hero. I just thought this story was really, really cool. So it's not a rescue story or a hero story typically. It's about an alligator. And this
not
alligator,
much fur on a gator.
What?
Not much fur on a gator.
Well, I just thought this was a really cool one. There was a 14-year-old American alligator, and he was named Mr. Stubbs. He was rescued from an illegal shipment of exotic animals. So apparently he was brought into the country for, you know, his skin or to make an alligator purse for some rich person or something like that. But he didn't have a tail when he was rescued. And they assumed that it had been bitten off by a larger alligator, you know, maybe a more dominant member of the species when it was living out in the wild. And so it was taken in to the Phoenix Herpetological Society.
Yeah.
And they actually built a prosthetic tail for Mr. Stubbs so that he could swim again.
Oh, that's awesome.
Is that not the coolest thing ever?
That is awesome. I love stories like that. I love watching videos of like the little cats or something like that. They make
the little
wheelchairs.
Yes. And stuff. Yeah, they're so cool.
I love those. You know, and technology is coming to a point now where, you know, they can 3D print something that's like directly scaled exactly how that cat or that however that animal's going to need, you know, that prosthetic limb. I bet you it was probably based on a 3D printing kind of a situation too. You know, I saw not related completely, but there was a father who had a son that lost his arm, lost most of the lower part of his arm. And so he actually, through 3D printing, printed a hand for his son that actually his son could control very easily. So, you know, a prosthetic arm made out of the 3D printing stuff. And the thing with that 3D printing is that as the child grows, he can just keep printing out new ones that grow with him as well. So
that's cool. Are you kidding me?
No, it's a cool use of technology, definitely.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, with alligators anyway, they need that tail to be able to survive. It's crucial for their survival because they help propel them through the water and they provide balance and food storage actually for the alligator. So now that they provided him with a prosthetic tail, they expect his life expectancy. Oh boy, it's going to be a good night, Ira. they expect him to live to up to 80 years old, which I thought was really cool.
That's
too.
Amazing.
So they not only enabled him to live a semi-normal life, but they increased his life expectancy.
Yeah, by almost 70 years there.
Is that not something?
That's really cool. I love that.
So the next one that we have,
hopefully the Gator Boys don't get a hold of that one though.
Are they the ones that like fight them or kill them or what are they?
No,
doing?
Well, they're the ones that, they go out when somebody does a call for the annoyance ones and they go out and capture them and put them into the little preserves and that kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully not. This is at that hermetological whatever society. So
yeah.
Say that one three times fast.
Herpetological.
What, no trivia on the word? What? Come on, Irie. I know you got something.
Herpetological.
Alligator trivia. Come yeah, on. You got something.
Herpetological. I think that means descendant of reptiles. So.
There you go. Yep. See that? He even knows what the word means. You're sick, man. Okay, the next segment that we have is the Seeds of Hope segment, which is one of my favorites. And this one's about a gentleman. Who his name is Kevon, K-E-V-O-N, Smith Sr., who took his little three-month-old baby out to eat breakfast at Cracker Barrel. And who doesn't like Cracker Barrel, right? That's like a really cool place to go for breakfast. But he took his little baby there for breakfast, and he noticed a couple kept staring at him, and they were, you know, much older than he was. They were, you know, maybe a senior couple, but an older couple. And he thought it was strange, you know, but he just kept playing with his little boy and enjoying the time with his son. And, you know, they finished their breakfast and the couple just kept watching him and smiling over at him. And so he didn't think too much of it, just that it was a little bit strange. And when they finished their meal, he took his little boy out to the car. And when he got out to the car, there was a note. And the note said, today your meal is on my wife and me. Enjoy that baby boy as long as God intends. Keep doing what you're doing, the Masons. And along with the note was actually enough money to pay for he and his son's breakfast. So I thought that was really cool.
Now that's awesome.
Isn't that great? And he was so touched by it that he actually called up the Cleveland 19 News. This must be somewhere in Ohio, obviously. And told the news team about what had happened to him and his son at the Cracker Barrel and the nice people. And he also said that it really touched him because he actually grew up without a father. And he said, you know, there are a lot of guys out there that I know aren't taking care of their kids to show that not all of us out there are being gangbangers. He says some of us are actually out there being fathers is one of the reasons that he decided to bring this story to the press. And I guess he's not even actually just like a really good role model as a father. He's also a coach. He quit a paying coaching job to volunteer coach a football team in his community. And he's trying to teach them positivity and show them how to work toward a really good future. And he plans to tell his son about the stranger's kindness when the baby's older. And he wants to teach his son about, you know, passing things forward and how kindness can go a long way. And he says he's definitely on his own behalf going to pay it forward in regards to the couple that paid for he and his son's breakfast.
So that's really awesome. I love stories that are like that because, you know, it shows we can make a difference in somebody's life even by doing something very, very small. And that's something that we focus on a lot on this show. Is exactly that kind of thing. You know, make sure that you, even just a smile that you give to somebody can make all the difference to them. And
I know, isn't that so cool though?
I definitely give props to this guy for being a daddy. You know, there's a big difference between fathers and daddies, you know, and this guy seems like definitely a legit dad, you know?
You know what? And to add to everything else on top of him quitting his paying coaching job and being a volunteer coach, the guy's actually a musician and he wrote a song about what happened to him, about his experience.
That's cool.
So I thought that was really cool too.
That really is. It reminds me of Chris Rock, you know, the this bit that he did at one point in time talking about daddies, you know, and I got to give props to the real daddies. I'm not talking about the ones that just, you know, that just get the girl pregnant and go. I'm talking about the real daddies, the guys that, you know, nobody thanks daddy. You know, nobody says, hey, dad, thanks for knocking out this rent. Boy, it's sure easy to do the homework with these lights. You know, nobody ever says thanks to daddy.
For real. So then the next story that we have that we can go into. Now, this one is kind of cool, too. It's those crazy kids, and I thought this one was amazing. There was a little six-year-old boy, and his mom, Sawyer Incontro, is the little boy's name, and his mom was 6 months pregnant, and she had a blood condition, and apparently she had had issues with this before where she kind of collapsed, and previously she had said that she called her boyfriend when she wasn't feeling well, and he came over and stayed with them until she was feeling better or took care of her or whatever. And that because of that, they actually taught the little boy what to do in case of an emergency if he were there alone with the mom. And they wrote the number 911 and put it up on the refrigerator. And he remembered that. And so he was hanging out with his mom one day, and they were alone in the house. And he actually heard his mom collapse in the bathroom. And he said it was a very scary ordeal for him, and that the door was closed, and that he called to her. She didn't respond. And so he knew, because his mom had showed him on the refrigerator, you know, how to call 911 and put it up on the refrigerator, what to do. So he called 911, and the authorities arrived, and the little boy was standing on the front step waiting for them, still had the phone in his hand. And the doctors were able to get to the mother and her unborn, I guess it's a daughter, her unborn daughter, and both are doing well now. But I thought that was a really cool one.
That is, and that's, again, you know, another great example of what we were talking about earlier, about how if you teach your kids young, you know, they really can make big differences. So, you know, teach your kids. If you guys have medical conditions, you know, teach your kids about what the medical condition is so that they can be aware and know when something's going wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always teach your kids how to use 911. You know, don't do a mistake though, like we did with our son. We gave you know, when he was really young, I think he was about 3. He was fascinated with phones and stuff, so we gave him an old cell phone that didn't work really anymore, and he ended up accidentally getting it powered on, and he dialed 911, and it didn't have any like minutes or anything. It was a prepaid thing, but it was still able to dial the emergency numbers. So we ended up with the cops at our door trying to figure out what was going on.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's a little more serious than the one I knew. My daughter, when she was little, she wanted a puppy. And so she actually got a hold of the free paper. And at that time, I had a corded phone in my bedroom. And I heard her talking on the phone. So I'm running up the stairs. I'm like, I hear her talking. She's not answering me. And then all of a sudden, conspiratorially, you know, I walk in the door and she's like hanging up the phone. I'm like, who are you on the phone with? Nobody. What were you doing? Nothing. So I'm like, okay. So I go over and I hit the, you know, the code for the redial on the phone. I don't remember what the numbers are now, but it was a woman. And my daughter had gotten savings bonds for from family members for Christmas presents. And she'd actually gotten one from her school for like an award. And she thought that those could be used like as checks. So she had seen the article in the paper for the puppy, called the woman up, and was trying to buy the puppy over the phone and have it delivered to the house.
Oh, no.
With savings bonds. And then there's another one. Do you remember Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember how they used to have the number for Mutual of Omaha on the commercial for Wild Kingdom?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, her father, actually, when he was a little boy, that's a running joke on his side of the family, called up Mutual of Omaha and was drilling them about the yaks.
Oh, geez.
He wanted to know all about the yaks. Kids are crazy, aren't they? They're so much fun.
if I was one of the responders to that, you know, I would definitely go with it. I would run with it. Totally.
Well, look, if you were one of the responders on Mutual of Omaha, you'd probably be able to give the a textbook definition that lasted 10 minutes on, you know, the breeding habits, eating habits of yaks.
Of the yak, exactly.
Ira, come on, you know it.
No denial.
Hey, let's go into some dancing music on an upbeat note. What do you think?
Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. I definitely need to go. So, yeah, hang out with us. We'll play a little bit of dance and music while we pee. And stick around. You guys are listening to the Positude Podcast. My name's Ira. She's Maggie. We'll be right back. So that was Van Halen back during the David Lee Roth days before they became Van Hagar. And yeah, that's Dance the Night Away from Van Halen 2, the album. That's the lightest and most radio-friendly song on the album. And they wanted to have, you know, the record company wanted to have that one released first because it was so radio-friendly. The band said no, they didn't want that, but they didn't have enough play with the record company to be able to have a choice there. The original title of that was Dance Lolita Dance. I thought that was pretty interesting. But,
I know, right?
They gained a lot. This is like the song that gained them the most following overall. Now, Maggie, did you like Van Hagar or did you like Van Halen? Which one do you prefer?
You're going to put me there. You're going to do it to me, aren't you?
I am.
That's like, you know what? That's like the everybody has this discussion, do they not? And, oh, man. All right. Look, I love Sammy Hagar for what he does is really good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I love his older classics. You know, I mean, he was really good. And I liked his stuff with Van Hagar. I mean, it was a whole different feel, a whole different sound. But to me, Van Halen is always that lineup. You know, it's always Eddie and Alex. And it's just Van Halen is Van Halen, you know, with David Lee Roth. You know, I mean, to me, that kicks ass. It wins over for me.
That's what it is for me.
I appreciate Van Hagar. I liked the stuff that they did. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it was good quality stuff. It's not that it was really poorly done it was just melodically, it was just so different, you know, than Van Halen was just, they were it, you know? I mean, they had that edge. They had that energy. And I really honestly don't think Sammy ever brought that energy to the band.
I saw both. I saw both versions in concert, and actually, I saw them when they did together. So they had both Sammy Hagar and David Lee Roth on the stage doing their own versions of the songs and stuff. And I thought that was really interesting. To me, I like the original lineup of Van Halen as well. The Van Hagar I like because it has a little bit more of a maybe an operatic or an orchestral kind of a feel to it, uh-huh. as opposed to the older stuff. But I love the older stuff for what it is. You know, that's just how it kind of how I look at it.
Well, that song that I chose tonight is actually, like, if not my favorite, one of my favorites by Van Halen. That's always been a go-to song of mine. I've always loved it. So
that's cool.
I thought it was cool that I play it.
That's cool. It's one of mine too.
Awesome. If we go into, let's go into Healing Herb. And tonight's Healing Herb that I chose was Garlic. And you knew I was going to do this one eventually.
I love garlic.
And I want to tell you, just a quick hint. A lot of people complain about garlic breath when they eat garlic. And I have a little hint for you. If you just eat a couple of leaves of any chlorophyll-rich herb, like a fresh mint or cilantro, parsley, or basil afterwards, you won't have that terrible garlic breath. So just to be aware, it's something that'll help you out when you're going out on a date. Or
yep, it breaks down those odor molecules, yep.
For real. And the healing properties of garlic, I mean, are just, we could go on for hours. It's a wonderful, wonderful I don't know that I'd call it an herb. Would you call it an herb?
Yeah, it's an herb. Yeah.
That's what they classified it as, you know, so I went with it. I'm like, okay, baby, I'm going with that one.
Yep.
I love garlic.
That's what I would classify it as, too. But, you know, there are some people that are out there that make it a meal. So I had a cousin that he loved garlic so much, he'd actually get one of the bulbs, and he'd just take one of the bulbs out, you know, break it open and get the you know, the meat of it out. And he'd just chew on that, man. Oh, okay, that's a little much for me, but.
So garlic's amazing because it does so many things. Like I said, I could literally go on for hours, but it boosts immunity to help fight disease. It naturally reduces your blood pressure. It beats antibiotics in fighting common illnesses, and it effectively combats cancer. And also, it can help detoxify your body. So, I mean, there are just many, many, many health benefits to eating garlic, raw and cooked. Raw, of course, is what they consider better for you. But Ira will put the link up on his page, and you can go ahead and peruse that. It's a really interesting article, actually. And the one after that, I'm going to have you post two this time, Ira. The other one has the recipe for the tincture that I'm going to do tonight for the really cool recipes. But it's a really cool site. I recommend everybody check it out. It's from a woman in Tennessee, and she's got so many helpful hints on there. It's amazing. And it's called Deep Roots, deeprootsathome.com. So definitely check out her site because she's really cool. But for the really cool recipe, I chose a tincture. And the reason that I chose this particular tincture is because we're coming into the cold season. And Ticks are coming out. I have pets. I have dogs. I don't know about you guys, but there's a recipe on that site for the vinegar of four thieves, which it's only four different herbs, so it's very, very easy to make, and then chopped fresh garlic. And the herbs are sage, lavender, peppermint, rosemary, and wormwood. Okay, so I lied. There's five. But anyway, and chopped fresh garlic. And it's really easy to make. You don't want to spray it directly on your skin, though. You do want to dilute it with water. And it's a natural bug repellent. And I know that I've done a bug repellent before, but this one, when I came across it, actually seemed more powerful to me. It discourages ticks, chiggers, and mites. So it's different than the one that I did earlier in the season that repels mosquito. And you can dump some of this stuff on a cloth and keep it in your pocket. You can put it around your pants legs. A lot of guys are starting to hunt this time of year. You know, put this around the base of your pant legs. It's very easy to make. It's very inexpensive. It should only be used externally, though, but it's safe for nursing mothers. It's safe for everybody. So you don't have to worry about, you know, the side effects of chemicals with this tincture. And all you do is you fill a jar with 6 tablespoons of the herb mix. So it's a tablespoon of each, and then 1 quart of cider vinegar. Combine 12 tablespoons of the premixed herbs, and then 2 quarts of vinegar in a large sealed glass jar, and steep in a cool, dark place for 2 weeks or so. And every day you just take it and shake it and put it back on your shelf or, you know, inside your closet or wherever you're storing it. And then you strain out the used herbs, keep the liquid, and it makes about 2 quarts. So when you're done straining it, you put several cloves of crushed garlic in and close the lid, and then let it soak for another 3 days. And then you strain out the garlic and throw that away, and you're done. And it can be kept, it should be stored in a cool, dark place, but a cool place like a refrigerator works. And it can be preserved for a very long period of time by canning it. Just remember to date and label it, of course. But the cool thing about this is there's so much of it that you can actually go in with your friends and make it together and split it amongst yourselves, because it makes 2 quarts. So it'll last you a really long time. And I just thought that that was a really cool one. I thought it was easy, simple.
Yes.
And, you know, around here, there are a lot of problems with ticks back home, you know, and in the country. Like I said, a lot of guys are hunting. Animals are just, this year seems to really be a problem with tick infestation in this area.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of my my friends and I, for our dogs, we have those Sorrento collars. I think it's Sorrento, where they're supposed to repel fleas and ticks and everything. And what a couple of my girlfriends actually experienced is they got the all-inclusive collars rather than to do the dip on the back of the neck and or an oral pill. And the ticks jumped off of the animals, but they went into the furniture and their homes became infested with ticks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So this is awesome because you can actually do that too. You can use it as a spray on your furniture. It's all natural.
Let me give a couple of helpful hints too when you're making these tinctures. Number one, if you're using mason jars and you've got the metal lids on it, don't have the vinegar up to the edge of the metal lid because it will eat through the metal lid. So you don't want to have that. And also when you put the herbs into the vinegar, you want to make sure that none of them are exposed to the upper area, the air, because that can cause a little bit of molding to happen. So you want to try to, you know, get them pressed down into the liquid as much as possible. If they're in the liquid, they're not going to go moldy. So you just, you know, as long as you do that, kind of go in and stir it every day, basically.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love stuff like that because, like I said, I mean, it's something that you don't have to worry about the side effects of, you know, chemicals, especially, you know, an infant nursing mothers. This is safe for everybody.
Yes.
I think that's really cool.
Yep, absolutely. You know? Unless you have an allergy to something that's in there, but that's kind of doubtful. So,
right. I am to sage, actually, but we won't go there. But that's okay. That's eating it, you know, I mean, and burning it. For a spray to be used as a tincture, I don't imagine it being an issue at all. And I can't
and there's
wait
a modicum of it in there, so it might not be much to affect you.
Yeah, and I'm going to use it to spray my animal bedding down too. You know, and my furniture, I am going to do it in a spray bottle and put it everywhere because I don't want what happened to my girlfriends to happen to me. So, and it's a very inexpensive thing, so it'll save you a lot of money in the long run. Do you want to go into Maggie's Moments?
Sure can.
Play that funky music, white boy.
I'll put it in later.
You're such a brat. Okay, let me think about how I want to start this one. You're going to go crazy when you hear it.
Okay.
So I guess we can jump right into Maggie's Moments and play that funky music, white boy. There we go. Thank you. This story is kind of an interesting one, and it was, of course, what I always do. It was in the lines of helping people, but it's kind of a lesson for me and a lesson for others, too, that do this kind of work to be kind of careful because you can get bitten sometimes when you're trying to help someone. And the story that I'd like to tell you about today actually happened to me yesterday. I had a meeting to go to, and the girl that I had to meet with chose a local pub/restaurant. They're supposed to have really good food, and the building's really, really old, so there's a lot of energy there. And she'd driven past it several times and always wanted to go in and check out the energy of the establishment. Now, I've been frequenting the place for many, many years, although I hadn't been there in some time because they had changed hands, changed owners. I just really didn't frequently go to it anymore, mostly because the one girlfriend that I used to go there with all the time moved away, and I don't know why, I just didn't go back. But the energy there is very, very strong. And so that's where we chose to go for lunch. And we met up there and we went inside and sat down. And she's immediately, her head spinning, and she's like going crazy. She's like, oh, I feel it. And So we talked to the owners about indirectly through the waitress about possibly doing, you know, a small investigation there. She would like to have gone through the building and, you know, found out what was there because she's a ghost hunter. And she's also intuitive. So she wanted to know, like, what her gut told her was there as well. But they weren't down with it, which is okay, you know. And we don't make a big deal out of it. You know, we might sometimes ask. But if they say no, you know, that's it. It's no, we don't push the issue or anything like that. So anyway, we're sitting there having our lunch, and the waitress started to open up to us as she found out what we did. And basically, I just described us as ghost hunters, and I explained to her that I was a psychic. And so she started telling me about the energy of the building and that they were all terrified to go upstairs, and she hated going upstairs for ice. And even the owners of the establishment sent their employees up into the attic because they were petrified to go upstairs in their own building. But yet she didn't want me to do an investigation and clear the negativity there, which I didn't understand it, but I'm like, okay. And I said to the girl, I said, you know, I can make it better. I can fix it for you, you know, but she, you know, you've got to let me up there. You know, you've got to let me see what's going on, and I can definitely take the energy away for you. And you know, they just weren't having it. So I was like, okay, whatever. So we're sitting there and we're eating a really good lunch, by the way, and it was very, very reasonable, which was good for my pocketbook. And the waitress started to open up to us and tell us about some of her experiences there. And then I noticed a gentleman come in and sit at a booth. I'm telling you, as soon as he walked in and sat down, I saw the waitress talking to him. And I said to my buddy, I said, check this out. I said, and you know, I said, that's her boyfriend. And she kind of looked over. Well, he locked eyes with me at that moment. And I'm telling you, it was very, very intense, very strong energy, very, very dark, very, very dark. And so he sat there for a while, and I got the impression that he was sort of eavesdropping on our conversation. We were talking shop, and I have a big event coming up that we were setting up. And so we were talking about things like that and, you know, different experiences that we'd share, you know, just stuff like that. And he was listening to every word that we said, and I could tell that he was. But every time that his eyes connected with mine, I could feel that energy, you know. And so I instantly knew that he had some issues that he needed some help with, and he needed to be clear. So after a while, it was probably about 45 minutes he sat there, and then finally he left. And my girlfriend was going nuts because she's very susceptible. She's an empath. But up until yesterday, she really didn't know how to block the energy. So that was one of the things we met to discuss, was to help her to shield herself from the energy of others being an empath. And so she was very, very susceptible to it. She could feel it. And it was a very uncomfortable time. And I knew that I needed to do something, but I really didn't know how to approach him. And you know, when he looked at me, I got that same feeling that I get, you know, it was like attack, hands around my neck, knocking me backward over the chair. That's the feeling that I got. Yeah. And inevitably, when I get that feeling, it's usually something pretty strong. And I hesitate to say it was a full demonic as opposed to a very strong attachment, because I really didn't get that close to him, but it felt really dark. So intuitionally, I can tell you it was not good.
Oh, yeah.
So he left, and the waitress comes back over and she goes, hey, what'd you think of that guy sitting over there? And both of us are like, oh no, he's really dark, you know? And he's got a lot of dark energy around him. And, you know, and I explained to her that, you know, I said, look, I said, that's your boyfriend. And she said, yes. And I could sense that she was very, very afraid of him, and she was terrified. And she was very nervous, and I needed to help them. But I needed her to tell me, you know what I'm saying? I needed for her to be able to admit it.
Right. Exactly.
So I just kind of let her talk for a few minutes, and this girl started to visibly shake. No joke. And she says, well, I'm not really scared. And she really wouldn't admit to it. And it's not like we, you know, quizzed her or anything like that. I could feel what she was feeling. My girlfriend empathically could also feel a lot of what she was feeling. And, you know, she eventually just kind of spilled it out that there were some issues there. And, you know, she didn't go into great detail, and I didn't press her. But I just handed her my card. And I said, look, I said, you shouldn't be in a situation that you're uncomfortable in. If you're scared, I can help you. If you want help, I can help you. But you need to approach me. You know, you need to be the one that comes to me and tell me that you need help. And so she took the card and she said, thank you. She goes, I'll get in touch with you. We chatted for another couple minutes. She went off. We finished our meal. We left. I got home later that evening and I get a Facebook request from a guy, and the guy's like, can you help my friend? My friend needs a lot of help and I'm worried about him. And so I said, well, send me the link to his page. And so he sent me a link and he goes, well, that's not him and that's not his picture, but my friend really needs help. Something just didn't feel right to me. It felt very off. It felt fake. You know, something wasn't right. So I'm like, call me. So I gave the guy my phone number. He calls me up. And I said, you know, started asking for some background information. And again, my gut's just churning like crazy. And I could feel something was very, very wrong with the situation. So as I asked him a couple of questions, he says to me, well, yeah, actually, my friend was at a restaurant in local town, the same one that we happened to be at. And he was having lunch and he started to get really freaked out and the energy was really strong and he started to get really nervous and he couldn't figure out why. And I said, oh, okay. I said, so that's the guy that we saw at lunch today. I said, we were at, you know, such and such restaurant. And he says, yeah, he was there. He was at that restaurant. And I said, really? I said, around this time frame? And he says, yeah. I says, oh, okay. I said, I got an eyeball on that guy. I actually met that guy today. And I said, he had a hat on. And he says, yeah. And he described the hat. Well, I deliberately said, I can't recall what the kind of hat was. Do you know what kind of hat was? And he described it in detail. And I'm like, okay. So now, how would he know what his friend was wearing at that restaurant, know that his friend was at that restaurant? And my spidey sensors were just going crazy.
Oh, yeah. Right,
at that particular time. So finally, I'm like, okay. So he goes, I said, so why are you telling me? How do you know all these details? And he goes, well, I'm the guy. I go, you're the guy, really? And he goes, yeah, I'm the guy. He goes, you told my girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. And he says, and she came home and told me everything that you said, and she gave me your card, and I'm calling you to find out why you said that to her. So needless to say, so I had him on the phone for quite a while, and I explained to him why I said what I did and why I felt what I did, and then he gave me his family's history and stuff like that. And there are definitely some serious mental issues as well as some other stuff going on. And he actually asked for my physical address, which of course he wasn't going to get, you know. And so I said to him, I said, look, you know, I can help you. I can help your girlfriend. You know, if I can't, I'll get you to somebody that can help you type of thing. And, you know, you want to meet me? He says, yeah, she said you wouldn't tell her where you lived or whatever. I said, no. I said, clients don't come to my home, which isn't always absolutely the truth, but clients don't come to my home that are, I feel, a threat to my physical well-being. So I said to him, I said, look, I'm coming to there's a public event I'm doing next weekend. I said, if you want to hook up with me, you and your girlfriend can meet me there, show up at that event, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you both in person. And if you decide you need the help at that time, be happy to do it for you. And so in essence, you know, here I am trying to help this girl, and I didn't feel as though she would betray me. I didn't feel that way at all. I felt like she was terrified, that she needed help, that she was afraid. I have to tell you intuitively what I think happened is she went home and tried to broach the subject with him, and he got very, very, you know, pushy.
Oh, yeah.
And insistent on, you know, why was she acting that way, or why was she questioning him, or whatever the conversation was. And for, you know, whether or not she physically gave him my card and gave him my information. I kind of feel like she did, but under duress. You know what I'm saying? So
that'd be my thought. Yeah.
Yep. So we'll see what happens with that one this weekend. If they show up, they show up, you know, whatever. But
could be interesting.
It's a lesson for us, you know, to, you know, as much as we want to help people and we put ourselves out there, that sometimes there can be certain repercussions, and, you know, you really have to protect yourself individually. And so, you know, I guess it was a lesson for me wanting to help people as I go about my daily business to maybe be a little more careful at times, which it makes me upset that I have to be that way, because that's not how I am. You know what I mean? I mean, I shouldn't have to hold myself back in order to help someone. And I have to feel like the reason it played out the way that it did maybe he needed to talk to me one-on-one to decide that I was legitimate and that I could help him with his issues, at least the spiritual issues. The mental issues, no, you know, I mean, that's not my thing. I would get him to somebody that was able to help him, you know, but I don't know. I was kind of torn about that, but I thought I'd share the story to let us all know that we should maybe be a little more careful. And
yeah.
I really don't know what the solution was in that case. You know what I mean? I did what I felt was best, and tomorrow I'm sure I would do it exactly the same way.
It's a good reminder to always protect yourself. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, my spiritual protection was there. I mean, as soon as I felt that energy, I mean, the walls were off, nothing was getting through, you know, I mean, he was trying like hell to throw that energy toward me. I don't know that it was a conscious effort. You know, I felt it coming from, it wasn't him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can say that much without, you know, divulging too many details of the situation there, but because I do have, you know, I feel like there's a sense of confidence, even though I'm not giving the name, I don't want to divulge too much about what I felt and saw around this gentleman and in this gentleman, but I can tell you that he was throwing some pretty serious energy, at least from his direction was coming some pretty serious energy.
Yeah, I definitely understand that.
You got me. So you know what? We'll see what happens, you know, and maybe that was just God's way of bringing him to me directly more quickly. I don't know.
Sometimes that direct approach is used, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And everything for a reason, everything for a purpose.
Yeah, but you know what? At the time, though, I was guided not to go up to the table. And that's the thing that, you know, it was like I was told, don't move. Don't go up there and try and talk to him. It's not the time. It's not the place.
And that's the one thing that I know with you is one of your better skill sets is that you do always listen to your intuition. You've listened to that better judgment that's there.
Yeah, you know, I tried to. And, you know, I was told not to go, so I didn't go. I mean, if I could have gone there and taken care of it right then and there, man, that would have been the end of it. You know, but again, I'd have to have his permission, you know, and it was her workplace. So it really wasn't the environment to broach something like that.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes those things get tricky. You don't want to be like in a booth in a restaurant and have, you know, some action take place that, you know, isn't conducive to a public setting. You know what I'm saying?
Right, so. Exactly.
But anyway, that is what it is, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And we'll go right into happiness homework. And this one I thought, too, was school starting was kind of a cool one. But somehow I was reminded of foster children this week, and I started thinking about that. And I saw an article or a blurb or something about foster children and how – when they're forced to leave their homes and when they go from home to home, a lot of times these children don't have luggage or anything to carry their personal belongings in. So, I mean, imagine being displaced from your home, having to go to a strange place, and then the possibility of finding a foster home and maybe being moved two or three or four times and the emotional trauma that can cause for a child. It's heart-wrenching. You know, and families getting separated, siblings getting separated, with all of the difficulties that these poor souls have to go through, to find out that in most cases, the caseworkers have said that these children don't have anything to carry around their personal belongings and asked for luggage, actually. You know, if you have any old luggage laying around your house or you buy a new set of suitcases, or you're going on vacation and you go through your closet and you find a carry bag that you haven't used in 15 years, or even with children, a lot of children, I know my daughter did from year to year, she would use her book bag after the school year during the summer, and then in the fall she would get a new book bag. So she'd always keep the old one. So we would accumulate them and then give them to a Goodwill. But if your child has an old book bag or school bag, or, you know, if you have an old beach bag or even an old large purse laying around, anything like that, that a child would be able to use to carry their belongings in, if you could just contact family services in your county or your city and donate them, I think it would make a world of difference to these poor children that have nothing, that are getting displaced. And it breaks my heart to think that they have to carry their things around in garbage bags. You know, I think it would make them feel a little bit better if they had their own belongings in a suitable container, you know, so that, I mean, I just, self-confidence wise, I mean, to have to go to, I put myself in that situation and to have to go to a foster home where there, you know, are probably other children and maybe children that I'll have to go to school with in my age range, you know, and to have to show up in the middle of the night with, you know, my personal belongings in a garbage bag as opposed to, you know, a tote or an old suitcase. You're already getting off as a, you know, it's bad enough what you've been through, but right away there's another self-confidence hit. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You're already feeling worse about presenting yourself to a new family that way. And I don't know. I feel like if anybody can do that, I'd really be appreciative. And I'm sure that the children would as well.
They would indeed. And, yep.
Now, see, I'm trying not to get teary-eyed at that one. So, and then, Will. Hey, you want to go into the comedy corner?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, I just have one this time because it's a little bit longer, but I hope you enjoy it.
I'm excited to be here. I'm glad to be home. I live here. I'm excited. I travel a lot doing comedy, which is awesome, but I get scared because everywhere I go, I think it's haunted. I believe in ghosts, and it terrifies me. And if you're like me, if you believe in ghosts, the worst time, the scariest time, is when you're in the shower. And you're all sudsy and vulnerable. You ever shower extra sexy in case there is a ghost watching? You ever just, oh, ghosty, no, stop it. You're so bad. Stop it. Sometimes if I stay in an old hotel, I think it's haunted. And a friend of mine told me, she said, if you think your hotel room is haunted, what you should do is when you check into the room, you should introduce yourself to the ghost so it's not scared. Yeah, so I've been doing this. Like every hotel room I check in, I'm like, hello? I'm gonna stay here tonight. I don't like to wear pants. I find them restricting. Yeah, which was fine until I did that and the maid was still in the room. Like, I don't like to wear pants. Me neither. Oh my God. My dad's a cop. He wants me to protect myself when I'm on the road. He's trying to get me to buy a gun, which I don't think is a good idea because I'm stupid. I don't know a lot about gun ownership, and my dad's trying to teach me things. I don't know. He told me this. I didn't know this. If you have a gun in your car and you get pulled over, you have to declare that weapon to the officer. You have to let him know you have a gun in your car. And I just don't think I'm going to be good at that. Like, the cop will come up. Do you know why I pulled you? I have a gun! I don't think that's okay. Like, I'm gonna have to write you a ticket. Are you really? Like, I don't think that's cool. No.
So I totally love this girl. I definitely want to watch some more from her.
Okay, for way cool affirmations in scripture, for affirmations I chose, my fears of tomorrow are simply melting away. And John 14:27 of the New Version, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. Okay, just start.
Yep.
Okay. And then we go into things my dad says, do you do you? And my dad used to be a trucker, and so we were on a trip one time, and I can remember him talking about trucker safety. I would just like to ask everybody that's on the road to please be respectful of your truckers, because they have a very, very difficult job to do, and to tailgate them or to cut them off, it's very, very difficult for them to maintain control of the vehicles in traffic. And as much as they get a bad rap, they're really good people and they're very hard workers, and they really, really need to stay safe and keep you safe out on the road. So watch out for your truckers, my dad says. And that's it. Ira, have a good evening.
Alrighty, Maggie. Thank you so much for everything and through the technical difficulties that we've had with this show tonight. It's been an interesting one, and hopefully you guys out there will have a great week. We'll talk to you again very, very soon. Thanks for listening to the Positude Podcast. Go to openeyesnetwork.com to check out the archives of the show and take a listen. You guys will have a great time. We'll see you again next time.
Do we have time for all that?
Yep. We'll see you guys again next time.